Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, well done, sir, on the instant reaction podcast to the Cam Akers commitment. Would encourage any Nolcast listener who has not already listened to that product to go ahead and give that a listen when they have time. That was recorded last night around midnight, just kind of a raw feedback and what exactly Florida State had accomplished in what is by no means a insignificant recruiting coup. So we will spend a little bit more time kind of putting a bow on the Akers commitment, have a broader recruiting conversation, and then give a little bit of a bowl preview here as we move into the final 48 hours before the Orange Bowl. So excited to do these. As always, want to start by thanking the people at Louisiana Hot Sauce and the partnership that they've been able to provide and allow us to bring this to you with more consistency, allow us to do things like the instant reaction pods after games or after significant moments in time when it comes to Florida State football. And they've been instrumental in allowing us to bring more product consistently and also to step the level up of audio quality and a couple other things that we're continuing to toy with to try to bring you, the listener, the best product possible. So I want to thank Louisiana Hot Sauce as always. And Bud, let's jump right into this off of what is still very much kind of an emotional high for the fan base with the ability to go into Mississippi, into the heart of SEC country, and pull out one of the best running back talents that's emerged from high school over the past couple of years.
Ingram, I totally forgot to do this the other night, so now I'm going to start speaking like a Ole Miss media member. I talk about Cam Akers going to Florida State out of Clinton, Mississippi, one of the finest high school running backs you will ever see, probably since Marcus Dupree, announcing at the Mississippi Sports Hall of Fame, hallowed ground there. And he does pick the Florida State Seminoles, shockingly, over the Ole Miss Rebels. Cannot believe this could happen. How could you go to a school that does not have an air raid offensive coordinator, a school right. that is not about to be on super double secret NCAA probation, a school that has a head coach squarely on the hot seat? I do not understand it. I really can't keep that voice up.
I say. Absolutely.
We're not going to do a whole podcast like a Faulkner novel. yeah, man, those guys are, wow.
Special type, man.
I actually heard a story that one of the networks does not let their Ole Miss and Mississippi State guys go to the same All-Star event because they got into a fist fight. Because that's how big of, like, fans they are of the program as opposed to media members.
We have not previously discussed this, and I have heard the same story.
So because that is, it's true.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy and pretty indicative. Look, every fan base has their insane batch of people. Some are larger than others, particularly on social media when it comes to schools like, say, University of Tennessee and others. But, yeah, it's been a special 72 hours or so to watch the Ole Miss fan base really come to terms that that a generational talent from the state of Mississippi was very much getting ready to lead the state. So enjoyed all kinds of crazy, just asinine posts on message boards that have shared with me. You kind of alluded to it there. One of the better ones was some guy that was complaining that Cam Akers was going to go to sanctified ground, Bud, and commit out of state. Which I mean, yeah. You need to readjust your priorities in life if you think a state Hall of Fame is some kind of special hallowed ground. But
and as these folks are making hundreds of dollars on Cam Akers by running like probably 30 commercials before he actually got to his commitment at about 8:45 Eastern time. But Akers, it actually gets worse for Hugh Freeze here. Did you happen to see what he said or allegedly said to a recruit?
I am unaware of this. Please inform me.
All right. So I was speaking to Chevin Callaway, a corner recruit out of South Dallas at the Under Armour check-in on Tuesday. And we meant to write this up on Tuesday, but actually got it written up today on SBNation.com. You can check this out. And I asked him, I said, hey, we've been hearing a lot about negative recruiting directed at Ole Miss with the NCAA thing. Going on. What has Ole Miss said to you about that? And this is verbatim. And this kid's considering Arkansas, considering Texas, considering Ole Miss. He said, quote, Well, Coach Freeze told me that when you're that big and out there with faith in Christ, he's like, what do you expect? Jesus got nailed to the cross. So he was just telling me sometimes things like that happen. But that's never going to change how he's going to treat his players and take care of them, even if I don't know if he really did make the mistake doing what he did or not. But I can just tell you he's a good person, great person. I know that they're looking at maybe a bowl suspension for 2017. So he actually broke that news there with the Ole Miss bowl suspension, and that was the least newsworthy part of the statement, I guess. I don't know what they're going to do, but I don't think that'll affect anything as far as how he treats his players and stuff like that, end quote.
Yeah, I almost wish you had not informed me of that, bud. That is just like, disturbingly, man, I'm not a fan of that at all. Really kind of repulsed by it in general. But
yeah, it's kind of shocking.
That may be even more egregious than I dreamt last night that God wanted you to come play for the University of Florida.
Oh, the Urban Meyer, Sharif Floyd.
Exactly. Matt Elam. Yeah, the whole
crew. That was the vision of God dream, right?
Exactly, yes.
Okay.
And, wow, Jesus nailed to the cross. That is, I'll remember that one. Yeah, that's disturbing and on so many different levels. But, okay, well,
yeah,
that's...
Ole Miss fans are coming at me on Twitter and telling me that I made that up, but I have the tape, and it's 9 minutes long. It's in the middle of a pretty long, extensive interview about a number of recruiting subjects, and that one was really interesting. Okay, so let's get back to Cam Akers. I just wanted to share that real quick. Good gosh. Huge deal. Number one rated player in FSU's class now. Going to start recruiting for FSU. First time, give Brendan Sinone credit for this. I think the first time in like a couple decades or something that the number one player in Mississippi actually left the state and went to somewhere that was not an adjacent state. Granted, okay, Florida State's right. Only two states away, but still. And the first time since 2008 that the number one player actually left the state at all. Just a huge coup. I broke down in the instant reaction. I'm not sure how much more I have to add to that, but I will say that recruits definitely took notice of that. You know, you got Cam Akers going to FSU last night. You got Stanford Samuels, who's a very charismatic guy. And then you have Josh Kando today, who I thought was one of the most impressive players at the Under Armour practice for day one. 6'6". 245-ish defensive end, pretty easy to stand out there, and he had a really nice performance today. He's recruiting for FSU. Things are going pretty well on the recruiting trail right now.
Absolutely, they are, and when you get a kid like Akers, it's undoubtedly going to just be something that other kids take notice of, and it's a massive deal to be able to go into Mississippi and be able to pull a talent like that and, you know, to be able to go into the heart of SEC country. As much as I roll my eyes when I say that, it's just I think it's a significant moment in time for Florida State to be able to penetrate a little bit. I don't want to say a cultural barrier, but the kids in that part of the country are so so kind of baptized in the SEC lore. That it's just hard to really state how big of a deal it is, and that's really where I want to give credit. I think you did a great job of breaking down on the Instant Reaction podcast the flaws and how much Ole Miss kind of brought this upon themselves to a very large extent. At the same time, I have to give Florida State a ton of credit, and not that you did not, but you know, just because he wasn't going to go to Ole Miss doesn't mean that he's not going to go to Georgia or Ohio State or any of the other players, the major programs of the country that were involved in them. And Florida State did an incredible job starting the process early, something that we talked about throughout the course of the summer, where we seem to have a Cam Akers update about every other podcast. But they did an incredible job of getting him and perhaps more importantly, all the people that surrounded him onto campus and just made it a place where he could really start to sit there and see himself spending the next 3 or 4 years. So incredible coup for Florida State. a reminder as to what they can do on the recruiting trail. Also a reminder as to the quality of individual recruiter that Jimbo Fisher is. And I'm not going to say that this is going to be the norm for Florida State at all, but if Florida State can reestablish any kind of recruiting presence in Mississippi, in Louisiana, look, it doesn't mean that they're necessarily signing a five-star running back every year, but if they could just be a player in there and maybe sign a kid or two a year, it would go a long way in kind of opening up the region more for them. And look, there's a, you know, you're in the western part of Florida. You're certainly in the I-10 corridor there. And it's not all that far of a travel for a lot of really, really talented kids. And like you said, in this year, it'll make kids perk up, take notice, and certainly will be something that the freshmen, sophomores, and juniors of Mississippi and kind of the surrounding area take notice as well. So,
and how about the junior college kids in Mississippi?
Exactly. I mean, yeah, that's nice. Even perhaps more valid point as well.
So, can I add something here, Ingram, to something I did not say last night, and I went back and listened to it. I probably should have said it. I did put a post on Tomahawk Nation that had some of this in there. But I think if Ole Miss is doing a postmortem on this, Cam Akers' mom basically had said to Ole Miss, your recruitment goes through me. Right. Don't try to get to my son through other means. You know, you talk to me. Right. And I think that in some ways backfired on them, because I think a lot of people on the Ole Miss side underestimated the impact that Cam Akers' biological dad had on his decision. There, from what I understand from reading Ole Miss people's writings, and I don't know Cam Akers' real dad personally, is that, look, obviously he was rooting for whatever team that was not Ole Miss that Cam Akers seemed to be favoring at the minute, right? So when he was like an LSU, he was the guy was really, you know, high on LSU. When he was like Ohio State, he was high on Ohio State, et cetera. He wanted them to leave the state. I don't think Ole Miss ever really effectively got to the biological dad. And something that I heard one of the Ole Miss guys say as far as Jimbo Fisher's exact pitch to them was this. And this is, man, this is slick. Apparently Jimbo told Cam Akers on an in-home visit, Ole Miss's cheating is not your burden to bear.
Damn.
You don't, good for you, Jimbo. You don't owe them a damn thing.
So
that
true.
Is slick and that and is really that good. Is
absolutely, absolutely. You don't, and that's addressing a key issue that kid and a lot of kids encounter, and that's in-state pressure, and that there's some, you know, form or fashion that you owe it to your state, or you owe it to the flagship university of your state to go there, and that addresses that as well as anybody possibly could, and that's yeah, damn Jimbo. It's great to hear things like that, and it's kind of what I referenced a second ago.
Brown jacket, Jesus.
Yeah, brown jacket, close of time. But that is we talk about Brewster and Florida State having an elite recruiter. It's a reminder that Florida State does have another elite recruiter on staff. His name's Jimbo Fisher, and certainly his ability to be out there is limited, and some of the rules and stipulations that are tied to what the head coach can and cannot do. But there's not too many people better as far as closing, and there's not too many people better in a in-home setting than John James Fisher. So good for him, and I had not heard that, Bud, but that's a hell of a statement and a very true thing, and that's quite the line to deliver to a kid.
By the way, the other thing I picked up from the Ole Miss people today, specifically, like I told you that the hire of Phil Longo, the air raid guy, was a major concern for Akers. It appears that Ole Miss botched this even more than I realized. They had Phil Longo in town. He was actually spotted at a restaurant in town. He was interviewed. Ole Miss insiders knew he was going to get the job, right? But Sam Houston State, I think they either got shut out or gave up like 3 points or something to James Madison, like right after he was seen in town, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of Ole Miss boosters were like, hell no, you can't hire this guy. His offense just had, you know, put up a three spot or a zero spot or whatever it was in the playoffs of FCS.
Right.
Despite the fact that he had some injuries and probably a pretty good coach. And James Madison is a dominant FCS team.
Yeah, JMU is quite a good lower level football team.
Yeah. So they basically had pressure not to hire that guy because, like, immediately coming off, like, that really stinker performance. So they waited to hire him. But the downside to that, apparently, according to these Ole Miss people, was that Ole Miss's coaches weren't free to tell Cam Akers who his OC was going to be and explain how stuff was going to work.
Right.
How stupid is that?
Yeah. Well, like, I mean, they just they very much got the bed that they made and have to lay in it for numerous reasons. But, yeah. That is that's quite telling in just the way that they handled that recruitment in general and some of the surrounding issues that you and I both heard and talked about and even some of the things that you've brought up the last couple of minutes here in conversation. Whew. So appreciate the assist, Ole Miss. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. That's like Ole Miss. That's like FSU sacked Ole Miss three times, but then also like ran the fumbles in for touchdowns. Each time. Some news I broke today. I got a nice phone call. I was sitting in a barbecue restaurant that had some very nice Wi-Fi, which is somebody trying to upload a lot of 4K videos. I appreciate it. Looked at my phone, and it was Zaquandre White's dad, Zach. Zaquandre White, the four-star running back out of North Fort Myers, and he had called me. And he said, hey, got some news for you. I said, what's going on? He said, Zaquandre got his score. And that meaning his ACT score. So that is a big time news because prior to that, he was not qualified and he got a 20. And some people are, I guess, mocking that and being jerks on Facebook trying to brag about what their ACT score was. And, you know, all of us have strengths and we also have weaknesses that we have to work to overcome to succeed. And I hope that all those people that had those nice ACT scores are really working on getting like 5% body fat and running a 4.5 at 215 pounds. I got a feeling that they're no closer to that tomorrow than they were today. So good for Zaquandre White. I know that's something that he, you know, he needed to get done. Zach told me that was the best Christmas present they could ask for. And then he also wanted to clear up some rumors about people on Facebook basically speculating, and I told him, I said, look, man, I'm not responsible for the Facebook commenters. That's a unique crowd. Speculating that somebody in the class would leave FSU or drop FSU or look elsewhere. And he said, look, you know, Zaquandre thinks he's the best running back in the nation. And you kind of got to have that mentality to play at this level. You really have to have that level of self-confidence and belief in yourself to go up against other elite athletes. And so he's looking forward to competing with Cam Akers and Kalon LeBourn, and I don't think most likely that any guy is likely to get 20 or 30 carries a game. Fisher throughout most of his career has really kind of spread it out more. So anyway, some really good news there. Maybe a little less good news. I spoke to Kalon LeBourn, the four-star running back commit out of Virginia that I just mentioned. I found his answers to be a little bit confusing to me. And I'm not trying to bag on a kid here. They're all kids. But he also does not have his test score yet and has not set up his official visit yet, which oftentimes makes your antenna go up, you know, if you've covered recruiting for a while. And he said that he still does not have his test score back from the test that he took before Halloween, but that he's also scheduled another test already.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if he truly doesn't have that score back or if he's not being straight with me and maybe he does have the score back and maybe it wasn't the score he needed and that's why he's already scheduled to take another test. I don't know. I know that Zaquandre got his score back and he took his test well after LeBourn took his.
Yeah, interesting.
So I'm not trying to bag on a kid here. I'm just saying this is a situation to watch.
It is. That's a kid that hadn't that kid gone to four schools in 4 years in Virginia? Something like that. I probably shouldn't say something that like that without being absolutely confident.
Most people think that the most recent school is probably a positive thing for his grades and transcripts.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, like that should help.
Understand.
Last,
I understand what you're saying there, sir.
Last recruiting tidbit, I guess, would be Marvin Wilson told me that he had a great relationship with Odell Higgins and a lot of the commits in FSU's class. He said that he has a top five, but it's basically FSU and LSU at the top in some order, and then Ohio State kind of like a 2.5, and then everybody else is real distant. And then he
biggest USF. Yeah, biggest thing to take away there is Texas out, USF in.
Yeah,
just my right. own personal opinion.
Agreed, and that's basically like a little hat tip to Charlie Strong, and maybe a little middle finger to Texas for letting Charlie Strong go there. I know a lot of recruits really liked him. Look, Marvin Wilson is not going to go to USF. That's foolishness. Last recruiting thing, Josh Kando is getting a lot better, man. He is a mm-hmm. lot better now than when I saw him in like March, and he's a lot better than when I saw him in July. He seems to really have put that extra year coaching at IMG to good use and playing extremely well. I had a number of good reps today against some elite-level offensive tackles at the Under Armour game. If you guys don't think we'll podcast again before the Under Armour game, at least not about recruiting. So if you want to know if FSU's going to get any kids to commit to them during the game, the answer is no. They are not. But that doesn't really mean anything negative. They're still doing really well in recruiting.
Been a nice uptick there, and I don't want to sidetrack us too much, but the Kando kid is just another example of Florida State managing a recruiting process particularly well and managing multiple different parties. They did a great job of recruiting his father as well, and just hats off to Florida State, not just recruiting the hell out of a kid and a certain particular person surrounding him, but doing a better job of opening up a larger circle and getting more people involved and maybe being able to better position themselves for a kid than they would have otherwise. So good on that end for Florida State, just from a macro approach and what they've been able to do. And certainly the addition of Kando and now Akers has given Florida State as much momentum as any school in kind of the final closing month of recruiting. But if there's not anything else that you want to touch on the recruiting scene, I would like to go ahead and move the conversation into the Orange Bowl preview and have a little bit of a look at what Florida State might see from Michigan.
Yeah, let's do that. Where do you want to start, Ingram? Because Michigan, do you want to start like with the bad news or with the good news?
I want to start with the good news, and before we do that, want to just take a brief moment here and thank our second sponsor, Madison Social. Matt
That's
and all the people
good news.
At For the Table are always sources of good news and are always sources of good times as well. Something you've been able to take part in more firsthand than I have over the past couple of months. But honestly, I'm looking forward to getting down to Tallahassee in January and being able to again, experience what Madison Social brings. And a conversation that we've had, or at least a point of emphasis that we've tried to bring up over the past couple of podcasts, is how well Madison Social ties itself, in particular to basketball season. A lot of these late night ACC matchups is a great place to go for a 9 o'clock tip off, something like that. Sit down, have a couple beers, enjoy what will be one of the more exciting basketball seasons that Florida State's had of recent memory. And whether it be an away game or a home game, keep Madison Social in mind, if not for the game itself, just for a little bit of post or pregame. And want to thank them as they are a long-running sponsor with us and really are as good of a pair as we could hope for, and just very fortunate to be able to continue to work with them as we move into 2017.
Yes, indeed. By the way, Matt sent me something today. Did he send this to my personal Twitter, or did he send this to the Nolcast DMs?
You know, I haven't been able to. Last time I was on the Nolcast account was about 10 o'clock this morning. So if he did it, I did not see it.
We will start this out then with some analysis from our sponsor, which is pretty cool. He forwarded along Ed Fang's Power Rank metrics, and I'll read it to you. It says, Tony has updated his analysis throughout the season, and his analysis suggests a sharp improvement in Harbaugh's fourth down decision-making. I've posted an updated version of Tony's article at the Power Rank. To check it out, click here. This is a screenshot, so I cannot click on it. Michigan plays Florida State on Friday night at 8 p.m. My numbers like Michigan by 6.5, but maybe it should be more because of Michigan's aggressiveness on fourth down. Also, I'm always looking for good content for the site. Please feel free to send me an articles you find fascinating. Thanks for reading, Ed. P.S. If you're a Stanford fan, the article might make you puke in comparing Jim Harbaugh and David Shaw. All right. That's actually pretty cool. I very much appreciate that. And, yeah, I do think that history shows some of the better coaches, specifically Belichick and now Saban, do go for it on fourth down. And Ingram, I wonder, do you think that they feel more free to make what we know is statistically the correct decision and really not a gamble because they won so much that even if the media perceives it as the incorrect decision, that they probably won't get criticized because they just won so much they're essentially immune from criticism?
I think that plays a role. I don't know that that's a major role. I think it – Harbaugh, Belichick, Saban, people like that, I think most of their decisions exist outside of media concern. But certainly for an up-and-coming coach or somebody who's not nearly as established as them, I think it may be a little bit harder to take part in activity that you think is correct and what you deem to be the responsible choice, but maybe still looked at as risky behavior by those surrounding you and the media that is not going to be nearly as kind to you as they would be with some of the other names that we just mentioned in that conversation.
I think that's fair. Now let's get into some of the maybe the I don't say bad news, but the scary part about playing Michigan, right? Guys, Michigan's defense is by far the best Florida State's seen by really a pretty clear margin. They statistically have been better than Alabama this year, which is kind of crazy to think about. And, you know, Florida State has played a lot of really good defenses. They played Clemson. They played Florida. They played Miami, which actually has a very good defense. Louisville. NC State, also a pretty good defense this year, kind of under the radar, and in Boston College. And yet Michigan, I think, is pretty clearly ahead of all of those defenses. They are coordinated by Don Brown, who was the coordinator at Boston College back in the day, and then prior to that, Maryland. Jimbo Fisher is very familiar with him. I meant to do an article on Fisher's offenses against Don Brown's defenses, but unfortunately, guys, have not had time to get to that. And looking at a stack of stuff I got to get done with Under Armour and recruiting, I'm just not going to be able to get to that. However, they've always been really interesting matchups. Sometimes Fisher got in the upper hand. More often than not, I feel like Brown's defense has performed pretty well against Fisher's offenses. He's known as Dr. Blitz. Michigan is a very high-pressure defense. They will bring pressure from everywhere. One of the ways that they're able to do this, Ingram, is that they have a defense that is entirely comprised of seniors and Jabril Peppers. I mean, literally, they start 10 seniors and a junior who could be a top 10 pick in the draft. I don't think he's that good, but a lot of media for some reason do. That's ridiculous. I'm sure those guys are going to want to go out on a high note. They're probably going to want to prove that, I don't know, that Michigan deserved to be in the playoff or whatever, and that the Ohio State guy was short of the mark to gain, blah, 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 whatever. Michigan's defense is incredibly good at stopping you on early rundowns. You are going to have to be able to throw the football if you're FSU on first down and on second down. Because if you get in third and long, you're probably screwed, right? That happens against most good defenses. We also know that against the good defenses he faced this year, DeAndre Francois was pretty bad. His quarterback rating was really not good against teams with winning records, against ranked teams. So that's not all on him, certainly. You know, better defenses were able to give FSU's receivers trouble and the offensive line trouble, but also the quarterback trouble. Florida State is going to have some opportunities, probably less than a normal game, probably less than most of the games they played, but some opportunities to hit passes on early downs because you know Michigan is going to very much attempt to stop the run. When FSU gets those opportunities, they have got to cash in, and they have to cash in big, because it's very hard to drive on Michigan at any real extended length. You've got to hit explosive plays against them, and that means trying to set up shot plays. Hopefully Dalvin Cook can get some creases, things like that. I don't see Florida State driving the football very well on Michigan's defense, not consistently. Here's some stats for you, if you guys, and I know stats don't always read well in the air, but I'm going to do a couple of these. You can check out the statistical preview Thursday. Today's Wednesday, right? Yeah, you can check it out Thursday on Tomahawk Nation. Michigan's run defense, fifth nationally success rate, third nationally stuffing rushers at or behind the line of scrimmage, fourth nationally minimizing line yards, 13th nationally preventing successful runs in short yard situations. That's really good. extremely good. That is, yeah, very, very tough. I think the other problem here is that Michigan has the number one rated pass defense in the nation. I think their entire secondary is going to get drafted. They also have the absolute best sack rate in the country. Michigan actually has a higher sack rate than FSU. FSU has more sacks, but on a, like, what percentage of pass plays that you face end up in sacks? Michigan has more. Slightly. But still, that's really a tough matchup, man. That's
Well, this is a conversation that we've had a little bit, both in Brown and his history with Fisher, but also just how talented that team is, and it's talented at every level. It's not as though they have a dominant front seven and then a couple, you know, liabilities in the back. It is a team that is just evenly spread throughout the talent. They have, you know, they certainly have key figures at each position and guys that you'll notice before others. But a senior-laden team, a team that knows its responsibilities as well as anybody in the country. And with all that talent, they have one of the better defensive minds in college football. So as big of a challenge as Florida State's faced all year, as you said, we make that comment while still acknowledging the talent that's found in Gainesville, Clemson, and other teams that Florida State's played. But it will be as good of a test as this offense has faced, a offense that has certainly performed better as the year's gone on. How much of that is tied to the defenses that they've faced, we'll probably get a better idea once the Orange Bowl comes. But yeah, is as big of a task as this team has seen on the defensive side of the ball, and a incredibly challenging blend of seniority on the field led by one of the better defense coordinators in all of college football.
But Ingram, the spread on this game is only 7. And there's a reason for that. And the reason is because Michigan's offense is good, but it's not like as good as Michigan's defense good. It's just pretty good. They are obviously really well coached. I think they do a number of impressive things in terms of how many different run concepts they're able to put together. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is they haven't necessarily been that good at running the ball. I'm very interested to, and I wonder, I wish I could go watch a Michigan practice, because the variance in their rushing offense in terms of how many different plays they're able to actually run, I don't know how they rep that all in practice. But I guess they do. They're only 42nd nationally in yards per carry. That's really not that great. And their rushing offense, opponent adjusted, so, you know, taking into account the defenses they faced, is only 42nd. Their passing offense has actually been a little bit better. They've got some decent receivers who we can talk about, I guess, if you want. Amara Darboh is really a pretty talented guy. J.U. Chesson, another really talented receiver. Jake Butt, the Mackey Award winner, probably the best tight end in the nation. They also really do a nice job of using – I know you noticed he can talk about this a little more, but they do a nice job of using formation and motion and play action to prevent pressure on the quarterback. I think, what are they, 28th nationally in pressure prevention, so that's pretty good. But I know you wanted to talk specifically about all the motion they really run.
Yeah, I do want to talk a little bit about the motion, and also I completely echo what you just said, Bud. The most impressive thing to me when I watch this offense is how much they ask of the kids and the diversity of some of the things that they do, but also how much they're able to execute. It's incredible, particularly for a college team. In regards to the motion and what we talked about, some of the bigger questions that surrounded this defense, particularly in the beginning of the year, was just assignment and knowledge of assignments and able to execute that. You're going to face a hell of a test against Michigan. It's going to look very different. It's not going to be a fast-paced offense that tries to confuse you with tempo and start to second-guess yourself. You're going to see a lot of double tight sets. You're going to see a little bit of a slower brand of football, but what you're going to see is a ton of pre-snap motion, a bunch of sets that are disguised as one thing, and then pre-snap morph into something completely different. And it will be a huge test for Florida State to know their assignments, and how they change, even with some kind of window dressing and movement, pre-snap movement. It will be different as far as some of the tempo teams they faced, but the question of assignment football and knowing what you're asked of on defense is very much going to be asked, and that it will be one of the biggest things that I'm looking forward to in seeing how far Florida State has come. They do an incredible job at Michigan, just as Harbaugh did at Stanford, of moving all kinds of people pre-snap. And if you're not exactly sure what you're doing or where you're supposed to be, you will have given yourself up, given yourself an angle that is impossible to overcome. And all this, pre-snap movement that they do is really just designed to make you second guess yourself and not be able to have contain if that's your responsibility or whatever it is. So that is the biggest thing that I will look for as far as how Florida State responds to what Michigan does on offense.
And I think one of the key things here is going to be, does Michigan want to stick to its traditional I formation offense, right? And they do a lot of motion and shifting out of that. However, if they do, that will allow Florida State to play more of its 34 defense. And by 34, I mean three down linemen and four backers, as opposed to its 4-2-5, which FSU typically uses against teams that are going to run more 3 and 4 receiver sets. If I'm Florida State and Ermon Lane, as Tomahawk Nation first reported, is missing the bowl game due to a foot injury, I would very much rather try to play Michigan out of the I formation or out of double tights than I would try to run more 4-2-5 stuff, because I think right now for FSU, the secondary without Derwin James, without Ermon Lane, without hell even Nate Andrews, I think that is probably more of a weakness than your front seven. FSU's front seven, particularly when it was able to play more of its 34 defense later in the year, played very well and was able to stop the run, was able to pressure the passer. We saw Brian Burns come on. We saw Jacob Pugh come on. Those were really good signs. Does Michigan try to play more 3 and 4 receiver sets? And if so, does it take Michigan out of its comfort zone? How well does it use receiver motion there? I think those are all really interesting questions. And I'll hit you with a good stat here. Check this out. Michigan is 28th nationally in offensive S&P. That's the stat kept by Bill Connolly of SB Nation. Do you know what FSU's record this year is against teams that rank outside the top 25 in offensive S&P?
Does it have a zero in the second figure?
It does. Yes. Yeah. The second figure is indeed a zero. It is 7-0. And Florida State has not allowed more than 20 points in any of those 7 games. So if Florida State can find a way to shore up the back of its secondary, which is certainly a concern, I think, given that Michigan has a lot of talent at receiver and defensive back and a lot of time to prepare for this game, then they're going to have a really good shot to hold Michigan under 20 points or under 3 touchdowns. And if they do that, then I think Florida State will have a shot to win this game. I don't think they can win a shootout, against Michigan because I don't think they can really get into a shootout. I don't think they can score many points against Michigan. I'll be kind of surprised if they're able to. I think this is going to be an ugly game, a low-scoring defensive slugfest that sees FSU probably do a pretty good job against Michigan's offense, and Michigan's defense probably do a pretty good job against Florida State's offense. How do you see this thing playing out?
More or less what you just laid out. I think both defenses match up relatively well. Michigan may match up a little bit better with Florida State than Florida State does Michigan. I have some concerns about Florida State's linebackers and how they match up and some of the characteristics and traits that they have and how that will play out against Michigan's offense. But for the most part, I think Florida State's defense, particularly up front, will certainly be one of the better challenges. I don't want to say Florida State's defense is the best that Michigan's seen, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the best either. A very long-winded response, and maybe what I'm trying to get at is I think there's going to be a little bit of a premium or a little bit of an added value added to the play of your special teams. It's not necessarily been a strength of Florida State this year. What you get out of the kicking game obviously matters anytime you're going to be in a close game, but particularly what you get out of one Logan Tyler, I think, is going to be incredibly important. You can't have line drive kicks. You can't have punts that net you 28 yards. This is going to be a field position game. You just talked about a potential output as far as how many touchdowns Florida State has held opponents to, and I don't think that will vary a whole lot in this game. But look, if you have a couple of 26-yard punts strung back to back, then yeah, that could change. And this is not a team that Florida State's going to be able to go down 14 or 17 points or something like that and be able to stage any kind of comeback. It's just too good of a defense and too good of a overall sound team and too good of a program to expect something like that.
Absolutely, man. I think that, Florida State has a shot to win this game. Am I going to pick them to beat Michigan? No. I think Michigan's a better team. I think that they are – they're one of the – I think they're probably the most veteran team in major college football, at least among the Power Five programs from what I understand. And they've been a better team throughout the year. I think that some of Florida State's defensive improvement is legitimate improvement, and I think some of it is kind of fool's gold with having played some real weak offenses. One of the X factors I'm interested in, how much better is Wilton Spate going to be with a month off than he was down the stretch? Because down the stretch, Michigan's quarterback Wilton Spate was not very good. And part of that may have been due to the fact that he really busted up his shoulder pretty good against Iowa. And he made a couple decent throws against Ohio State, but for the most part, he really didn't play very well. He had several turnovers in the game. He was terrible against Iowa. Down the stretch, he really wasn't that good, and a lot of people think it was due to that injury that he either suffered or aggravated against the Hawkeyes. It would be really good for FSU if he's not much better. If he is back to sort of how he was playing early in the season, I think that is obviously going to make it tougher for FSU to win. It's just kind of one of those things we can't know because we haven't seen him play since the Ohio State game. You got a prediction for this one?
Yeah, Bud, I'll vary from you here. I think Florida State does win this game. I think it wins some kind of funky score where you get a two-point victory in the mid to high 20s. So maybe a 29-27, something like that, 28-25, somewhere in that area. But I think Florida State does win this game. Maybe that's me being a homer. Maybe that's me looking for things that aren't necessarily there. But I think Florida State gets good enough play out of its defense. Florida State's offense continues a little bit of an upward trajectory, not nearly the same output that it's had over the past three or four games. But I think you get enough out of your offense, and this is hard for me to even fathom, but somewhere I think on special teams you get a play that very much helps you win the game. Doesn't necessarily mean you get a punt return for 80 yards or something like that, but I think Florida State, despite being woefully inadequate at times in the punt return game, maybe gets a punt return that's 40 or 50 yards, allows it to flip the field at a pivotal time, and is able to win a close game in the fourth quarter.
You know, Michigan has had some struggles in the punt game over the last couple of years, including notably their punter dropping
one particular one comes to mind immediately.
A fairly notable struggle there. That was notable. I'm going to go, I think, Michigan 21, Florida State 16. I don't think Florida State's offense is going to have much success against Michigan. I think they could, but I think the odds are better that they get really shut down. I'm very concerned with Francois's numbers against the better defenses they face this year. And I think that Florida State's defense will play pretty well, but I anticipate a game in which Florida State's offense is probably giving Michigan pretty consistently good field position throughout the game. Obviously, I don't think Florida State's punting game is very good, as you mentioned. I think that the field position and Michigan's defense, which is clearly the best unit in this game by a mile over any of the other units on the field, be it FSU's offense or defense or Michigan's offense, I think that'll carry the day for Michigan. It wouldn't shock me if FSU won. And part of that's just that Michigan's inability to kind of score at will makes it tough for them sometimes to put teams away. So I'll go 21-16 Michigan. But again, I also don't think that bowl games matter going into the next year. In fact, I think that they are oftentimes extreme red herrings, and we are better off analyzing a season, especially when looking forward, without bowl games.
Right. Can certainly think of some notable teams in the past that have lived off bowl games that are at least had a false trajectory as to where their program was going based off bowl performances. But hey, look, I'm excited. You know, I'm as excited for this game as I can be to not be in the playoffs and to be playing one of these bowl games that has had its importance diminished even further. So. Looking forward to the matchup, looking forward to two programs, two blue bloods of the sport meeting each other. And it's a great way to end a season, and certainly offers Florida State some form of redemption that would have been hard, if not damn near impossible, for any of us to imagine halfway through the season.
Absolutely, yeah. They really turned it around. I think regardless of the result of this bowl game, they played better. There's a number of encouraging things to like, regardless of what happens in the bowl game. You know, who knows? Maybe Dalvin Cook gets loose in his hometown, hits enough explosive plays for FSU to pull out the victory. I will say this. I have not watched as much Michigan as I have, like, let's say, some of the bigger games FSU played this year. Just haven't had time. And to be honest, I'm just not into bowl games as much. I know some people really are. I'm glad you were able to watch a decent bit. Otherwise, I would have been kind of lost. I obviously very up on most of the stats of Michigan, and I remember most of the recruits as well. So with thanks to your help watching the actual games and the stats and recruiting knowledge, I feel like we're able to put together a pretty good little preview here. I'm kind of excited to watch this. Like, it should be good, you know, pro-style defensive football, not necessarily high-flying or pretty to watch, but I think that you could really see you can see a lot of pressure on both quarterbacks. I really believe that.
Very true. Very fair. Something that we'll talk about, something that we will reconvene post-bowl game, have a conversation, and have a look back as to this game in general, but also a larger macro conversation as we put a bow on the 2016 season, excuse me. So, Bud, look, it's not the season that we talked about in August, certainly. No one's going to get it confused with what it might have been or what it could have been, but it's been an interesting run, and it's been an interesting ride, and I look forward to this game, as you mentioned. And look, we'll break down this season as good and as thorough a manner as possible, but glad that we have one chapter left, and really excited to see what the Orange Bowl brings.
By the way, as a teaser for next time, thanks to y'all for giving us the great 5-star ratings on iTunes, and as well as Stitcher, any other podcast apps you want us to get on, please just let us know. I think we probably covered our bases with almost all of them. please make sure to support our sponsors. Continue to let them know on social media how much you appreciate them bringing you the Nolcast a couple times a week. We enjoy doing the show with you. And as a way to get back, we are going to do a mailbag show either later this week or earlier next week. I know we had a lot of questions. Most of them are recruiting. Some of them are team-based. I feel like we could almost do an entire show on who should transfer based on the running back position, because I feel like that's everybody's question. How is FSU going to fit all these running backs in? And I don't think people need to worry about that. The answer is going to be the best players will stay on the roster, and the ones who are not as good will probably transfer, and they will get playing time elsewhere because they're all pretty damn talented football players.
We will have a mailbag show as a form of giving back. We will also be dropping some things in the mail to people as well. So if we get a particularly good question or a train of thought that maybe we hadn't come up with, we've got some gift cards to give out to Central and Madison Social. We might even have one or two bottles of Louisiana hot sauce that might make its way to loyal listeners and people that we have interacted with in the past. So we will work on our fulfillment the beginning of the year and get those out to you. But just something to keep in mind, we have tried to find a way to put some type of, I don't know if you want to call it listener appreciation or anything else, but we've got some goodies, and it's time for us to get those goodies out into your hands. So don't be shocked if you see a direct message from the Nolcast account. That will be us looking in some type of manner, certainly not for everybody, but going to try to engage as many people possible, as we really do have an amazing listenership and just a great fan base in general that we would like to try to get something back to. So keep that in mind. If you do have a question, fire it off, and if we can in any way reward you, we will try to do that in the next couple of weeks here.
God moves. Yeah. I was rolling around in my mind, it occurred. What if God was a her? Would I treat her the same? Would I still be running game on her? In what type of ways would I want her? Would I want her for a mind or a heavenly body? Can be out here bogus with someone so godly. If I was with her, would I still be wanting my ex? The lies, the greed, the sex, wouldn't be ashamed to give a part of my check. Wearing a cross, I mean a heart on my neck. Heard I would reflect on the streets of the side. Ride with her, cause I know for me she died. Through good and bad, call on her like I'm chirping her. Couldn't be jealous cause other brothers worship her. Walk this earth for her glory. I'm grateful to be in her presence. I try to stay faithful.